Happy New Year from the Artist Rolls. We're glad to be back from our holiday break and already have several episodes lined up for release in January. We start with the intense and table-thumping John Schmay. Enjoy.
John. So John, do you know anything about Dungeons & Dragons or like role-playing games?
Yes. I have three boys.
Okay. What do they play?
The youngest is the aspiring D&D guy. He wants to be a dungeon master. So I bought him some books recently. But the 23-year-old's played every game on earth. Uh-huh. He's played everything. And he's so far beyond my capacity now that if I get him to play, you know, Rummy, I'm happy. But yeah. And the 15-year-old's a gamer. He plays. He does his Halo Xbox stuff. Uh-huh. But he also does some other stuff on a PC that collaborative with the headset and everything. It's really, really come a long way. So they play a lot of stuff, all kinds of RPGs. Uh-huh. Me, I don't. I love games. I play a lot of games, but I don't. D&D is pretty complicated. I actually had a college roommate who I went to Cal Berkeley for 2 years, and he was a genius, and he was really smart. And he and his buddy would sit in my dorm room, which, you know, was about the size of this table, and play all night while I attempted to sleep. So my emotional reaction to D&D is mixed. I would wake, you know, I'd be dreaming about elves attacking giant gnomes, and, you know, and I'd be rolling in my sleep and all
giant
that. So
gnomes, I like it. Good. Well, what you see in front of you is the Artist Rolls custom character sheet form. So the first thing we're going to do is have you write your name in the character name slot.
So if there is a moniker, a handle that you are known by.
Well, I am. Captain Intensity.
Captain Intensity.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to do this, let's do it.
Let's do it.
That is how I was known in various circles. Captain Intensity. And, you know, I tried to move up to General Mayhem, but they never gave me the promotion. But that was seriously my nickname, was Captain Intensity.
Well, at least you moved up from Corporal Punishment.
Oh, exactly. Ooh.
I like it.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Well, a Corporal Punishment is an advancement from Private Farts. So.
Oh, that's excellent. So, all that being said, I'm feeling better about Captain Intensity the more we talk about it.
Pick up a four-sided die there, which is
the first test. Can I count the sides on the die? Okay, I got 3, 1, 2, 4, 3, 4, 9, 2.
The one that's facing
up? The one that's
up.
On the bottom.
Oh. I got a two?
You got a two.
This game
We're
is
gonna
rigged.
Ask you to come up with your two-word motto, or two plus one. We also say that,
oh, yeah,
right?
It is
two or three. You have two or three words for your motto. While you're thinking about that, we are going to do a little intro. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Artist Rolls, a fun new perspective on creators and creating. I'm Sean Mitchell.
I'm Jamie Gower. And with us today is Captain Intensity himself, Mr. John Schmay, jazz musician, band leader, concert impresario, and the motive force behind some of the greatest Halloween concert/parties you've ever been to. And a variety of other venues all through the year and all around the Puget Sound. So welcome, John.
Thank you. The captain is in the house.
Was that a good description of what you do?
Well, I would add multimedia artist and interdisciplinary art scholar. I'm very interested in how art, music, literature, drama, how all those juices flow into one common thing in our brains and our souls. Hmm. They're all really all different roads to the same Rome, which is our consciousness.
Cool. Fantastic. What's your motto?
As such, my motto is, yes. Art is experience.
Art is experience.
Yes.
For whom?
For whoever is experiencing it. Let's hope. For it is, I mean, I can explain the motto, but, you know.
Please.
So the concept was, well, it's not a concept, it's the truth. The truth of art is it speaks in the language of its own materials. And what I mean by that is, when you're viewing a painting, its color and line and shape and texture and whatever's going on is the materials of the vocabulary that the artist is using to communicate with you. They're trying to get an experience with you. The modern artists in the 20th century, like Rothko, Kandinsky, and some of my other favorites, believe that the audience member was, the person viewing it, was an integral part of the experience that was being created, that they could... They, unlike the stereotype of the, you know, the tortured artist who's just going to emote and you know, howl to the universe, these guys actually felt very, very strongly that the viewer had to be considered as someone who who had a say in what the thing meant.
Sure.
And so, and of course, music is the most obvious example of this. I mean, people, they move to the music. The music, they imbibe it, right? When you're moving to music or dancing, you're taking the whole art form into yourself and moving with it. Mm-hmm. And so that is the experience. And the reason why that's important is, in the academy, if you will, in the academia, we've tended to like rationalize art using our scientific toolbox and pretended like it's this thing that we're observing over here that has some rational properties. I have a master's degree in music from New England Conservatory in music theory. And you know, you end up with these very erudite descriptions of music that are really more showing off your own capacity to conceptualize what you think the truth of the music is. So, for example, one of my graduate papers, which was accepted for publication in my professor's journal, titled "Multiple Metric Implications in Schubert's Der Leiermann in Winterreise Final Song, Using the Generative Theory of Tonal Linguistics as a Model of Musical Understanding." That was the entire title.
Wow.
And I climbed to the top of this mountain and realized all I was doing was cogitating in my own mental bathwater and pretending like that was the truth of the art, when in fact the fact of the matter is any 3-year-old can express what their experience in art.
Mm-hmm.
Am I intense enough yet? Because I'm warming
up. No, excellent. This is exactly what I want.
This is what I'm all about. Art is experience.
Cool. Let's move on to section 2 of the character sheet, the roles roll. We're going to ask you to roll a D8 and a D10.
Okay, now if I do capture Africa, can I move forward into Europe, or do I need to get some allies?
You have to keep rolling.
Oh. You have to look after whoever's waiting in Australia to take you.
Well, that's always the case.
Yes. Okay.
1-1, snake eyes.
Two. Wow.
Lowest roll we've ever had on the artist rolls.
Well, that, look, man, let's work with it. You guys aren't going to punt on me just because you got a crappy roll, are you?
We do, because it makes the discussion much less interesting.
Fine, you want me to roll again?
I tell you what, we're going to keep the two in mind, and we're going to have you roll again. 4 and 3, 7. Better. Let's look at the roll. The roles we have there. Studio artist, performer, writer, director, producer. We're going to ask you to divide up your points.
How many do I have?
7.
We gave up on the 11?
If you want only 2 points, you can divide.
Fine, 7. I love the spontaneous control that you have. Okay.
This is what being a dungeon master is about. You can explain that to your son.
Oh, that's true.
You have the chance to...
You shape the experience.
You shape it. That's right. But if there's something you don't like that the rules are telling you to do, but you don't like it, you just say, "Yeah, what the hell?"
Many dungeon masters have a screen so you can't see notes that they're mm-hmm. taking.
And oh, absolutely. Up.
And some of them roll behind the screen so that if they don't like the roll, they can say it's something else.
Well, this is actually very telling what you put on here. I'm going to conform to this.
Okay.
Can you read us through?
Yeah, performer was 3.
Performer 3.
Producer was 2.
Okay.
Writer was 1, and director was 1.
So tell us about why performer gets the most.
Well, let's review just for the studio audience what we're talking about. So I'm a jazz musician, and I also perform a bit of new age music. I'll perform pop music on occasion. Mm-hmm. Our Halloween concerts you so graciously mentioned are often very rock oriented, funk oriented, but in terms of my artistic activity, which I think this is asking about, I spend the higher proportion of any of this time actually doing the thing, like mm-hmm. performing, improvising. My music is jazz. It's an improviser's art. You don't compose it. You play it while you're doing it. And so I spend a high proportion of my time performing, which is what I want. I want the experience, this whole loop that we were talking about the experience and getting it back, the musician has to play to get that. You don't write a piece of art and stick it on the wall. You've got to go out and jam. Mm-hmm. You've got to make it live. Mm-hmm. You make the music live by playing it.
So what do you play?
I'm a pianist. I play keyboards, all different. I've played all the different synthesizers and all, but I largely play piano. Mm-hmm. And then I also play flute. Mm-hmm. I like to play flute on occasion. And then I sing a bit.
Do you have a group that you normally...
Yeah, we have the Cascade Jazz Quintet. It's been in the Seattle area for 15 years, proud to say. Mm-hmm. And we perform around the east side quite a bit. And it's a standard jazz quintet, also featuring my 15-year-old son, Adam, who's a smoking horn player.
Nice.
So I'm really, really excited about leveraging him in the group now because he's really come a long way.
Nice.
And a beautiful vocalist, Susanna Fuller, and a great drummer who's been with me since the beginning. We'll probably be buried together. So that's Brian Gamerick. So yeah, it's a great group.
Cool.
So we perform, performance is the thing, man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so do you write original music?
I do, actually. I actually have a little fake book of originals that I'm working on. It's one of my many sub-projects. I have over 60 jazz tunes that I've written that that are culled from a larger set that I think are worth, like a musician would want to play them. They're fun and they're interesting in it. So I've written a fair amount of music. This was actually an instructive exercise for me because I don't spend enough time writing. I would like to spend more time writing, but what the directing and producing activity is consuming the time that I would have for that.
So producer now.
This was very telling for me, the producer number.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting because in my career, and Jamie, you've seen this over the years, I end up producing almost every show I'm in. I end up running the joint. And it's not because I have to have any control. It's just because I end up, no one else ends up wanting to say, I'll be it, right? And I do like doing it, and I want a level of control. And I like realizing a vision. And so the producer and director components, you know, are to me add up to a 3 equal to performer, meaning that I've ended up producing every show that we've done. I do the set list for my band. Now, for a jazz band, a lot of jazz bands, the majority of jazz bands don't have a set list. They're like, hey, man, let's play that blues thing. Okay, let's play that. I never visualize any. I always visualize even a club gig as a show. It's got a flow to it. I've just naturally gravitated toward producing and directing these events. I don't like the fact that I have to spend this much time on it. It's just the amount of, you know, just the sheer amount of just grunt work to get a show off the ground. But, you know, I guess I never thought of myself as a director or producer, but it's just been that way. It's just like kind of who I am. And I just have to, you know, make my peace with it when I see this list here, realizing that I wish the writer was a 3 and the producer was a 1. But, you know, maybe that happens later in life. I don't know, you know. Brahms was composing when he was 80, so, you know, maybe it's still possible.
All right, we're going to move on to section 3 of the character sheet. That's the medium's role. We're going to pick up that...
Well, I'm a high roller, so I don't know what medium role really means.
Take up the D8 and the D10 again and give him a roll.
For those of you playing he just rolled behind a screen so he can whatever he wants about our roll.
I got a 7.
All right.
Do you think 7. I really got a 7, or do you think I just kind of made
no
it up?
Idea.
You
7,
never will know.
7 is 5.
It's my lucky number. Hey, it's another 7 over here.
Divide those 7 points among the mediums you see there.
Am I live?
Where does your audience complete your work?
Oh, where does it get delivered?
We've never said that before.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. That's good. See, I've influenced your vocabulary.
Yes, you have.
This is really interesting.
One would imagine the majority is live.
All right, so can you
go ahead and read them out?
Performer 3, producer 2. Oh, sorry.
No.
Jesus.
Let's do this one now.
Live 3, audio 2, video 1, web 1.
So how much on the audio, how much recording are you doing?
I record everything I've ever done. I have my first gig at the Straw Hat Pizza Parlor in Sacramento, California in 1976, which turns out to be a really fun little artifact because I'm still friends with that trumpet player, Scott Vento, who's a fine musician now, and I've threatened to play it for him in front of his kids, and they can't wait. They can't wait. He only knew we had a wide repertoire ranging from the slow F boogie to the medium F boogie to the fast F boogie, which has to do with the trumpet, which he played, which at age 14, if he just pressed the first valve, he basically could get a G blues scale.
So
that was, you know, that's basically how fast he pressed the valve was what we were playing. So I digress. What was the question? Live?
Recording.
I record everything. I like producing albums. I just finished my 2014 compilation. Jamie Gower will be getting a copy. This year, I've transitioned to video for the first time. I did CDs for the last 10 years, and I would compile what I did during the year. And it's kind of interesting because at the beginning of the year, I'll be looking at the Cascade Jazz gigs and the festivals we do and the private parties and blah, blah, blah. And then, in a way, my audio recording guy is like excited. Like, at the end of the year, I bet I'm going to have a lot of fun compilation CD because I love – here's the interesting dimension of it. I record because I learn what it was I wanted to play by hearing it back. As a jazz musician – it completes the cycle for me. And I've seen my son now like that. My son Adam, he very much wants to hear the gig after it's done because he wanted to hear what he did. Because when you're in the heat of creation, you kind of know what you're doing, but you don't really know how it all adds up. I love listening to it later.
You've got the one on video, so is that something that you see growing?
Yeah, I wish it would grow, and also web is one.
So what do you do on the web?
We have a website, and it's really... you know, it's about 10 years behind in terms of its the content. We've published some of our video work, but I mean, particularly around the web, I'm not as good at promoting, pushing my stuff out to the web, which is really ironic because in my professional life, I manage content management sites for websites and I'm really knowledgeable about it, but I really just kind of, lazy is not the right word. I'm a little bit inhibited in a very strange way about putting my stuff and keeping it up to date and being really passionate about it, but it needs to be done. And it's going to, that will be one of the New Year's resolutions for me, is to get more material on the web because in all honesty, video on the web have become sort of a lingua franca for people now. You know, people don't want band tapes anymore. They want to see your YouTube.
Yeah.
People don't want to go to your website and read about you. They want to see what you look like. They want to hear a few cuts.
Yeah.
It's really become, you know, the video is really, I want to see what you're like. And so now this fits naturally because I record everything on video. And I was, for the first year, I put out a video compilation. It's very primitive. You'll see the video recording quality is primitive because I really didn't attend to it. I just set up a camera and rolled. Yeah. But it marks a trend toward, you know, just sort of going where people are, which is video, right?
Let's be done.
Oh, we're done? We don't do style superpower?
Nope. You've reached the end of the first half of the artist roles.
Okay.
We'll be back in a minute with John Schmeck.
Here at the Artist Roles, we're dedicated to bringing you a fresh new perspective on creators and creating. So like, retweet, and subscribe to get more people involved and give us feedback. What do you like? Who would you like us to interview? How much less would you like us to talk? And as always, head on over to theartistroles.com to see graphics and links for all our guests. Now back to the experience.
Welcome back to the second half of the Artist Roles with Captain Intensity himself, Mr. John Schmay. So we've been through the first three sections. Now we're going into section four, style. Excellent. Excellent.
There's a graph there.
Excellent.
It's got two axes, from collaborative to solo and prepared to spontaneous. What we'd like you to do is see how that graph speaks to you. Let's complete the experience here. What's it saying?
John's holding the clipboard up to his head, hoping that the graph will actually speak to him.
You want 1x?
I want whatever works for you.
I have an idea.
Go ahead. Tell me your idea.
I'm thinking outside the grid. No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to show you.
Please.
Remember, art is experience.
That's right.
I'm actually just struggling with collaborative right now. Just give me a second.
You want us to tell you what the right answer is?
No.
You know, we will be posting a screenshot of the graph that John has just drawn for us.
Okay.
But if you could...
This is not the Knights of the Templar. It is reflective, like think of like mirrors, like big giant telescope reflecting mirrors at the bottom of each of the four that are pushing energy into this crucible in the middle. And there's all this action happening in the middle. So there's like the explosion in the middle. So let me explain it to our radio audience. So spontaneous and prepared are, to me, they rely on each other. So I used to have a little phrase I used called artistry is an index of familiarity. And by that, it meant if I know my material really well, if I am prepared and I really have all the options under my fingertips, I've done my 10,000 hours and what have you, the spontaneity is enhanced because now I have the maximum amount of control over my material. If I try to play in the key of G flat, which for any keyboard player is really difficult, I can't be very spontaneous because I just am not prepared in that. I can't handle G flat. It's just not my thing. Throw me down a half step to F, I'm all over the board. I'm on you, man. So now, the thing I was struggling with is I was asking myself, well, is collaborative and solo also true? Or I don't just, you know, be facile and make up a graph because it looks cool. But I'd say, no, actually, it's true. That degree in which when I play jazz, I pride myself on listening. I normally do extremely well with vocalists, for example, because I've had friends of ours, Kathy Rusezuko and Susanna Fuller, and other vocalists tell me that there have been other keyboard players I'll play with who can be relatively rigid. But it's very true that to the degree in which you can stand up for yourself musically, you can collaborate better because now you're expressing a point of view. It's just like having a conversation with someone who doesn't have something to say, much to say. You can have a conversation, but it kind of lies there. The collaboration will be limited. For people that have something to say, that's when you have the best conversations because they both solo and the collaboration actually gets better. So from my point of view, this is an interesting graph because it points out that you need, the sweet spot is to have all four of these things in play at the same time because then the unexpected can happen and the elegant can happen.
You talked about how the preparation can actually enable the spontaneity.
Yes.
What does spontaneity do for preparation?
It informs it. So as I play, I discover what it is I need to prepare. Hmm. So and I'm trying to be honest with you, like, I mean, when you're playing a tune, for those that may not be familiar with it, jazz, you know, works off these tunes largely that repeat. So you just play what's called a chorus or a whole one time through, and then another time, another time. Another. Oftentimes, the first time, and I'll listen back later, and I'll really hear this. It's amazing how the first time through, you're being spontaneous and you're thinking about the material. The second time, you actually start preparing the same thing you did in the first chorus because it starts to evolve on the cycles. You come around the top again. And many jazz musicians, if not all, you hear this. Like, the material comes back again, and now they're preparing it slightly differently. And in fact, I personally, I won't speak for other people, I personally do not like multi-take recording sessions of jazz, because by the time I'm on the second or third take, I'm in full preparation. I'm just practicing. I'm practicing the stuff that started out on the first take, mm-hmm. because my mind is done with it. The spontaneous bit, it said what it has to say today. Mm-hmm. And if you just keep asking me to play it over and over again, it will just continue to try and work that material. The spontaneity will be gone. You'll just have sucked the juice out of it. So I don't know if that makes sense.
No, because we've heard that in several different disciplines. People talking about, like in acting, they talk about, you know, you go out and you have a great performance and you think, oh, I'm gonna do that from now on. And you do it the next night and this audience doesn't react at all.
Yeah.
That it is that you can't be you can't replicate spontaneity.
Well, what's interesting is now there's a third dimension to this graph, which has to do with maturation of thought. So if I play the blues, you know, I was joking about when I was 14 years old, 15 years old, we were playing the blues in this pizza parlor. I play the same F blues today. And in fact, I was in California just 2 weeks ago with this guy playing with him, and it was really cute. Like, I have a tune that I wrote recently called Swing Right Through It. Mm-hmm. And I pulled it up, and I had not for the life of me thought of this until I'm in his house in Berkeley, California, playing the song with him. And I realized it was the same damn thing I wrote when I was 15. Dun, 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 dun. It's a swing shuffle blues. It happens to be in B flat. So I've moved up a key. That's my advancement. And I was saying to Mike, and because it, not until he started playing, I went, oh my God, we're, you know, 30 years later, we haven't changed. You know, I was playing the same damn stuff. But no, actually it was really cute because it showed that there was a maturation of thought. And actually what I wanted to get at was the idea of sculpture here. Okay, think of a tune like a block of marble, and you're trying to sculpt what you think it should be. Over the years, these tunes become friends of yours, and you keep sculpting them and sculpting them until you really have a refined view. And that's why in many jazz recordings by the great artists, sometimes you'll hear them play it, and the classic recording of whatever it is, and it will sound so perfectly formed. And it's because they've been spending 10 years sculpting their solo around that. So what's interesting is that the act of being spontaneous for 10 years has led to a largely prepared performance that just crystallizes. Mm-hmm. And there's a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. It's just very interesting because that's counter to the idea of construction of, well, I'm going to sit and think about, you know, the Beethoven, my sketchbook, and I'm going to do all this stuff. He was just doing the same thing. He was just taking 6 months to do what these guys do in 3-minute increments over and over again for 10 years. Yeah. So it's an interesting model. But I think there's a third dimension to this from this process itself spirals into maturity over years and years of execution. Hmm. Just a comment.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Section 5
that was great.
Of the character sheet is...
You want to know what superpowers I have?
You have 3 columns there. The superpower you think you have, the superpower that that other people might think you have.
Seem.
And the superpower that you would like. And you get one per column.
Choosing only one superpower is difficult.
I mean, tell me about it.
Tell you, you know.
I got all 5. How can I choose one? So what is the one you have?
Well, I was torn between telepathy and shapeshifter, and I ultimately picked shapeshifter because... I function in a variety of different worlds. I function in a world with my children where I'm pretty focused on what's important to them, and they have like little or no understanding of anything that goes on beyond their own interest, which of course is the true for all of us as parents, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But that's one. And then I function in a corporate world which is highly vetted and has very specific expectations about what I'm to say, when I'm to say it, how I shall behave. And I'm seen as Captain Intensity in that world, but my behavior in that is completely different than my artistic world, where I have to function as this leader, producer, director we talked about, mm-hmm. and also a performer, which is another role, right? And I have yet another role for myself, this scholar role, which I insisted upon earlier. I actually pride myself on the amount of thinking I do about things. I try to have really high-quality thoughts or challenge myself to think. And all those are shape-shifting. They're all different sort of, you know, different things. That's what I have.
Okay. How about what people think you have?
Hypervision, seeing ahead, through, inside. This was an interesting one because people don't see me having telepathy or mastering. I guess... Elemental Control, I didn't actually look at that one. And maybe people would say I have that. But
something drew you to
Hypervision. Seeing ahead through inside. It's the vision bit, right? So I'm seen as the person. Remember, tie this back to the director, producer. I'm seen as the one that says, oh, this is where we're going to go. This is how this will be shaped. And, you know, the beautiful thing about it, as much as I complained earlier about director, producers, you know, how lovely these experiences have been, mm-hmm. leading these people to a vision together, and how willing people are to go along for a vision, how much they love having someone express a vision but as long as that person's including them in the story in a way that empowers them as well, and not just, you know, being mm-hmm. dictatorial about it. Right. So to me, the hypervision of seeing ahead and through and inside, that's sort of part and parcel of what people expect of you when you sort of lead them towards some
right. And why they look to you to do that, because they think you have that.
Yeah, I have that.
And lastly, what you would want?
Well, time control for sure, because I'm 54 years old. You know, I don't expect to live much longer. I did a wonderful workshop with a fabulous leader in consciousness development in the world called Jean Houston. She's a world famous. She's written many, many books. And she talked about shaping time in her workshop. And she said it very blithely. I mean, like with real conviction, like, well, we just need to stretch time for this. And I thought, the way she said it was like, there is a way to do this. You can change time. You can affect. And interestingly, just full circle to this whole creative process. I find that I am a bit manic depressive about it. I will sit and sort of fret, but not do anything about a project. Oh, but what will happen is I will just like you know, it'll be like turn on the engine and set the fire, and then things will happen at five times their rate of speed while I'm in that creative mode, and I know it, so I trust it, so I'm not that worried about it. But I know that I've got to prepare for that. That sort of preparation for spontaneity, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I really want the ability to do this because I have many, many things I need to get done, you know, before I croak. Now, there's another sense of that, which is just gets a little more spiritual around. Someone who could master the past would not be mastered by it. They would not be. We tend to over cogitate the past. Our failures, what we wish we did, what happened, how we hurt somebody, how we didn't do this and that. We beat ourselves mercilessly with this stuff. If I could master the past, it would no longer have that hold over me in terms of trying, you know, the habit of living through those limitations that are, you know, I'm still reacting based on something that happened to me in fifth grade, and I'd like that to go away, you know. But I'm in counseling for that, so we're working on that right now.
Yeah. We're going to leap off of the character sheet for our final two questions. The first is about luck. Now, when we're playing role-playing games, when you're playing Risk or whatever you play,
yep.
You roll these dice, and they come out sometimes with a 2, sometimes with a 7, and sometimes with an 18. So there's some luck involved. Does luck play a part in your life? Do you believe in luck?
What did they say? Chance meets preparedness or whatever the heck it was. Mm-hmm. It's luck is... means nothing if you don't have the feelers out to exploit it, to see that something lucky has happened, to take advantage of it, mm-hmm. to move forward with it. My father and I used to have this endless argument about chess. He insisted, pessimistically, that chess was about who made the first mistake. And I insisted that chess was about who made the best move. And this was like a chicken and egg that went on forever and ever. Because how do you determine what a mistake is? But the reason I brought it up is I think it's germane to this discussion of luck is like, what is luck? Well, luck is only relevant in hindsight, when we see that someone took advantage of something that was an opportunity for them, something happened. Mm-hmm. If they didn't take advantage of it, then it went by the boards, and then it wasn't really luck.
Lastly, we're going to ask you if you have anything you want to plug.
I do, actually. We have very excited about an art series that we're setting up on the East Shore as a part of East Shore Unitarian Church community. And a whole herd of us have gotten together to put together a really fine arts series called East Shore Live. And that's going to be on the third Saturday of every month, starting in January, so January 17th, and every month thereafter for 6 months. So we've got a whole series lineup of all diverse kinds of things. We've got, I lead off with Cascade Jazz, and we do Jazz from the Soul. And these are going to be multimedia, interdisciplinary performances, but also done in a nightclub format, where we actually are, you know, serving liquor and food and having a nice time, enjoying ourselves in a nightclub atmosphere. But we're going to have all these different performers, and there will be sort of this informal atmosphere. Hmm. And the website's eastshorelive.com, and easy to find. It's just going to be a lot of fun every third Saturday of the month at East Shore Unitarian Church. CascadeJazz.com is where you can find out about the Cascade Jazz Quintet. We play on the east side regularly, all kinds of different places. But check us out there, www.cascadejazz.com. And we're fun. We try to make it fun. I mean, you go to hear live music, you want to have fun. Yeah. Last thing you need is a bunch of brooding artists on the stage.
Excellent. Do you want to do a wrap-up?
To wrap up, well, we've been talking to Captain Intensity, Mr. John Schmay, who has led us to an excellent discussion of fantastic approach to the style thing. This has been a great discussion, and we thank you for spending the time with us, John.
Art is experience.
Art is experience.
So go experience some soon.
Thank you very much for being here, John.
You're welcome.
Congratulations, you've made it to the special features portion of the podcast.
If you haven't already done it, subscribe on iTunes or the Windows Store, then leave us a positive review, whether you want to or not.
We're always on the lookout for interesting creative guests, so if you want to roll the dice, see what I did there, huh? Head on over to the Contact Us page on theartistrolls.com.
We can be bribed with candy.
Amazon gift cards.
Dog treats.
Signed photos of Kate Blanchett.
Ugh. And thanks again for listening to The Artist Rolls.
Maybe he's got some completely different thing. Let him just leave
him
alone,
think,
okay?
I'm agreeing with you on this.
I am exploring.
You know, there's no need for us to
Don't
fight.
Make me throw this dice. Don't make me throw this
and
dice.
Yet.
Who wants it in the head? Who needs it?
Thank you.